Wright, and welcome to Fast Break Breakfast, NBA podcast, off-season special edition, solo edition. My name is Keith. I'm here alone, once again, without John or Chuck. Chuck is still selling bao buns out of the back of some truck. John is being typecast as a racist all over Nashville. The off-season is rolling along. John and Chuck and I have actually started communicating a little bit this week as the NBA schedule has been released. We've started circling our calendars for which random weeknights we will descend on Memphis like Huns. We also, noticing in the Grizzlies schedule, we are planning to have a Rabble event in Memphis this season, which should be really cool. My early thoughts looking over the Grizz home schedule makes me think Adam Silver is hooking up Robert Pera and the people of Memphis because they get the Warriors both games on weekends. They get Clippers on the weekend. It's really nice, especially for the out-of-town commuter crowd that we are. Also get the rare Friday-Saturday back-to-back games, which is perfect for us, so we're real excited. Anyway, the NBA does keep just dripping the news out little by little, just enough for us junkies to get our fix. That's what that schedule release was. Just when I think I'm about to get into like the MLS or something, or watch even more Olympic games, NBA gives me that schedule, and that's all I need. Anyway, that's pretty much what these solo podcasts are. Without John and Chuck, it is the methadone for you hardcore NBA junkies. And that's what we have today. Again, we're having Derek James on to talk about one of the interesting young teams in the NBA, the Minnesota Timberwolves. I mean, I do at some point want to talk about the Olympics basketball, so I'll get John and Chuck in here, or maybe a guest, so we can talk about that roster that I called C-minus a couple weeks ago, and now it's really kind of playing like trash. I will say Coach K is doing his full college ball coach job of getting very little from his offense and his defense. I want to borrow a segment from the regular show and give you my steak and eggs for this week. My steak and eggs being the second half where Nikola Jokic just went off in the Serbia-US game. I definitely switched my allegiances in the second half. I was riding with the Serbs. I get very fickle watching these Olympics. I also wanted that Swedish soccer player to crush her penalty kick past Hope Solo after Hope pulled the old glove stunt. Anyway, before the interview, I want to ask you guys if you know about Loot Crate. Loot Crate is a place to get collectibles, apparel, and more from your favorite pop culture franchises, and it's delivered right to your door every month. That's right, Loot Crate is like Fan Essentials, but for epic geek, gamer, and pop culture gear. In August, the box contains exclusive collection of items from DC Comics, Archer, Dark Horse, and Kill Bill, exploring the darker side of anti-heroes. So go to lootcrate.com/fastbreak. And enter the code FASTBREAK when checking out to get a discount on your order. Again, lootcrate.com/FASTBREAK, and the code is FASTBREAK, all one word. So hopefully that's a sponsor you guys will enjoy checking out. Okay, and now just one more commercial, but you can get your skip button ready and jump straight to Derek in 3, 2, 1. My guest today is a writer for Hardwood Paroxysm. He's a Timberwolves analyst for ESPN 1500 in Minneapolis and is part of the Raised by Wolves podcast. Derek James, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Keith. How are you?
Doing real well. Do you live in Minneapolis?
I live in the suburbs, probably closer to St. Paul, so okay. Not too far away. I'm probably about 20 minutes from both cities.
Not a problem. I don't know the geography at all. We'll just go and say, yeah, you're a Twin City man. I think everything I know about the city is based on a couple scenes in Fargo where they drive into town. But anyway.
They're close enough.
Yeah. So how long have you been covering the Timberwolves?
I've been writing about the Timberwolves for about, this would be my sixth season, I think.
Sixth season.
If I remember that right. Otherwise, this will be my fourth year credentialed.
Oh, cool.
Third or fourth year credentialed.
Nice.
So.
Have you always been a Timberwolves fan?
Growing up, I was actually I was a Michael Jordan fan.
Oh yeah.
Like just about everyone my age.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But really I think the Timberwolves being the hometown team and growing up with Garnett and, you know, going to playoff games and things like that, those were kind of, you know, sealed it for me.
Right.
But I think the more that I write about it, I become more of a basketball fan, but I would say the Timberwolves are my favorite team. I don't know. It's weird how fandom changes with when you do it, cover them professionally.
Well, like, cause do you also cover the Hornets some, or do you edit still for At the Hive?
I try to. I'm not around as much as I would like. Okay. I got the editor job there 2 years ago, and then 1500 reached out to me, wanted me to join, and that was a paying gig. So that's kind of taken precedence.
Sure.
But I try to be around At the Hive as much as possible.
Yep, that makes sense. So you mentioned the playoffs. You can still remember Timberwolves playoff games.
I can, because it's probably one of my favorite moments.
Yeah.
And there haven't been a whole lot of them.
Right. Yeah, I was looking. So the NBA recently released their schedule for the upcoming season. And one of the big news or the big stories is the Timberwolves have 19 national TV games. And even I think 10, if you throw out the NBA TV, not quite actually, you know, national TV. My thought not a Timberwolves fan, but someone who just, you know, a Grizzlies fan, but who watches the whole NBA is, like, I find the Timberwolves very interesting, and they seem like obviously a team on the mm-hmm. rise with a very interesting young core. But this also seems – is were you surprised? Does it seem like an overreaction to their young core?
I'm still surprised because, 19, I was like, that's a lot of games. I think they had, half a dozen-ish somewhere in there last year. To jump from that to 19 this year is a lot of exposure. But I get the idea of showcasing – you know, the league's young talent, I think, before they necessarily prove that they're worthy of it, as promising as they are. Because that's really the thing to me. They haven't proven anything yet. I mean, they won 29 games last year.
Well, yeah, that's...
I mean, as good as...
I was needling you about the playoffs. Like, they haven't had a winning season in 12 years. And then it's like...
No.
And so my wonder is, does the average NBA fan who's turning on the TV... Like, I think NBA Twitter and, like, the blogger intelligentsia, we're all excited about the Timberwolves, but I wonder if the NBA, I guess, thinks the casual fan is going to be interested in, you know, like, Karl-Anthony Towns and Chris Dunn, Wiggins.
I think Zach LaVine's a big part of that, too. I
mean,
the slam dunk contest, I think, was a great exposure for the league as a whole. And I think having people debate Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine helps drum up that interest, I think, you know, in both players and their respective teams too. Because I mean, the Magic are another young team that people have talked about forever.
Well, you mentioned the Magic. Sorry, I'll let you continue, but you mentioned the Magic. Poor Aaron Gordon. They got one game.
Yeah.
That was the one team I noticed where I was like, wow, like one game is brutal, like, for the national TV schedule. But anyway,
I mean, they must have people. The NBA must have people just out on the internet, just kind of getting a sense for where the fans are with what they're interested in, who they're interested in seeing. Because I still can't get over that 19 number. I mean, the fact that they have 9 on NBA TV kind of tells me that they're like the new Hawks, where they just have a ton of national or NBA TV games, but even though they're fun to watch.
Right. Yeah. So what is the expectation? So this team, as you said, was terrible last year, despite having a lot of fun guys, and they pretty much brought back their entire core and made very little offseason additions outside of Chris Dunn. So I guess, what are your expectations, and what do you think the team expectations are for the 2016-17 season?
Well, I mean, you add Tom Thibodeau, and I think your expectations automatically increase, but I think the way we saw they finish the final 28 games of the regular season at something like 58. So, I mean, they were pretty close to a 500 team. You know, you figure that you add a little more shooting like they did in Brandon Rush, assuming health, of course, and a little more big man depth than Cole Aldrich. And I think that there's the thought that they can hover around that 500 mark,
mm-hmm.
but I'm still thinking somewhere between 35 and maybe 40, probably not that far off, but I think that's realistic. I think the playoffs, there would have to be a lot that goes wrong for other teams, in part because of the Northwest Division. I feel like it's just going to be a gauntlet where everyone's just going to beat up on each other, you know, 4 times per year.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, clearly in the Northwest Division, you have, I think, 3 teams that everyone assumes are comfortably better. And then it's going to be probably like the Wolves and the Nuggets. I think we're both fans are optimistic for this coming season. But realistically, like, yeah, it's going to be a very tough division, very competitive night in and night out. You mentioned Brandon Rush. It looks like they're kind of thin on the wing. Like, I'm looking at the roster And again, they added Cole Aldrich. They added Jordan Hill for, I'm not sure why, maybe you can tell me. And then, you know, Brandon Rush. So what do you think is the backcourt rotation going to look like? Like, do you think LaVine is still going to start like he did at the end of the season last year? Or how they can work Chris Dunn in?
I'll answer your Jordan Hill question. I think they need a rebound in.
Okay.
I'm not a Jordan Hill fan for a few reasons, but I know that he can rebound, and this team, you know, outside of Gorgui Dieng and Karl Anthony Towns, had no rebounding.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also not Adrian Payne, so he has that going for
him. Right.
That's very helpful. The backcourt rotation, yeah, that's going to take a lot of balancing to get figured out. I still do think that they start the season with the same five guys, so Rubio, LaVine, Wiggins, Dieng, and Towns, starting five. And then I know they talked about playing Dunn and Rubio possibly together. But I think there's a lot of potential for experimentation there as Thibodeau kind of figures out what he has, who actually works within his system. Because, I mean, they're going to have Brandon Rush, Shabazz Muhammad. They have to figure out what they're going to do with him. I mean, so I think that you have to find him minutes, whether it's at the three or the four. But then that also limits with how much time you can give Dunn next to Rubio and so on and so forth. So they have a lot of unique players that can go between two and three or one and two, but there's not really a great, you know, backup shooting guard option. I think that was one thing that a lot of people wanted more than Brandon Rush.
Sure.
But I mean, yeah, they really do seem to be shooting. And I think a lot of that, you know, guys just seem to improve too. That'll be the biggest thing. It was like Wiggins and LaVine developing that consistency from the outside. Cause that's going to free up a lot of things and hopefully make life easier for a lot of guys.
Yeah. So Zach LaVine, you talked about, and obviously that probably is a big reason why they got a lot of those TV games. I've been a very big Zach LaVine detractor, especially his first year. I spent a lot of time talking about like, this guy is horrible. But then last year he did take a bunch of big leaps in his game. He seemed to really finally fit a little better, be a dynamic scorer. His shooting stroke looked a lot better. His on-off numbers are still terrible, but what are you looking for Zach LaVine this year, and what do you think is his best fit on that roster? Is it a starter? Is it maybe like six man off the bench?
Well, for this year, I think he can start. Maybe long-term, maybe he is that six man kind of Jamal Crawford type.
Mm-hmm.
I know that comparison's been made a lot, but I think his first year, he was terrible, even at the start of the year when he was running point. He started to look more and more comfortable. And I think we saw the benefits of that once he did slide over the shooting guard position, because he had more facilitating skills. But also, I mean, it really forces you to understand the offense from another angle, not just as a shooting guard, but as, okay, so what does the point guard do? And, you know, being a point guard, you have to understand, all right, well, where does my power forward need to be? Where are my centers doing? Where are my wings? What's happening? So I think that was beneficial to him. And I'm glad they finally did make the switch, though, because that was not fun to watch.
Right.
But I would expect him to start for this year, barring any major surprises.
Right. Yeah. I mean, part of me, so that puts Wiggins at the three, and Andrew Wiggins might be, he's still young and he's still a very excitable player. And a lot of people are expecting big things, but he's a guy I watch and I'm not sure what his natural position is, or like, what is his most optimum position? Like, how do you think he plays best and how does he fit best with, you know, the Timberwolves lineup?
I don't know. I think that's a great question because, I mean, he doesn't have much of an outside game. I think Sam Mitchell put him at the shooting guard position last year just to kind of, for one, save him against going against bigger, small forwards.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also very capable in the post. So working him against smaller players, you know, typically shooting guards are smaller, even though position is kind of, you know, becoming less of a thing in the NBA.
Right.
But I think, you know, if he gets the smaller, the two wing players, on any given night, I think that's advantageous to him. And as he continues to improve his outside shot, I think we could see more capability from him. But that's obviously something that's really, I feel like, keeping him from taking that true next step.
Yeah. My follow-up question to Andrew Wiggins is, are we sure he's good?
I think he's good.
And that's no disrespect to our Timberwolves listeners.
Sure. I mean, he's finished 2 years. I mean, I don't know that we've seen guys have 2, 3, 4 year runs and then fall off the face of the earth before.
Yep.
So, I mean, maybe we don't know that yet, but I think he's a hard worker. I know that sounds cliche, but I mean, he did take summer off from Team Canada to work on stuff for the Timberwolves to improve there. So he's serious about it. And it's just going to take time, I think. Not every number one overall draft pick is going to be the Carl Anthony Towns that proves to be once in a generation, you know, right away. So I think there's probably going to be some patience with that. And he hasn't had the best start to his career as far as having a lot of consistency. He's had two different coaches, I know, due to unforeseen circumstances there. But that's tough. And, you know, they weren't the best systems, I think, for him because they were very kind of outdated offensive systems that don't leave him a lot of room. But I think we can see him become a defender. He has all the physical tools to do that. And I think that's a good start. I mean, if you can at least play defense and if you can get to the rim, get to the foul line like he does. I mean, I think James Harden and, gosh, I want to say Boogie or someone are the only two that got to the line more than he did last year. And that's pretty impressive for a 20-year-old kid.
Yeah, no doubt. And so, and again, to specify where I guess tongue-in-cheek asking if he's good, clearly he's an NBA player. I think clearly he's going to have a long, a long career. My when I watch him play and I wonder, because he gets hype, he gets a lot of hype as part of this new young core, and he has those added extra pressure of being a top pick. But it's like, my wonder is his ceiling all-star? Like I was comparing some numbers, and as you said, he's incredible at drawing fouls. That seems to be one of his main strengths. But like I was comparing his numbers with like Rudy Gay, and Rudy Gay has gotten, I think he's fallen off. Like his luster has completely been lost with a lot of NBA fans. But like Rudy Gay was a pretty good player, you know. Like he's had a long career, and their second year numbers are almost identical, except like Rudy Gay's actually a better shooter and was a better rebounder. Like Wiggins doesn't seem to rebound very well. So that's just my question. That's my question when I look at Wiggins. It's like, you know, like what is the ceiling? What do we expect from him? Is he going to be the long term, you know, like Robin to Carl Anthony Towns, Batman type thing. So yeah,
sure.
That's my wonder there.
I think that's a good question. The Rudy Gay comparison is actually interesting. I think, you know, shot selection aside, I like Rudy Gay or generally have.
Right.
I think the rebounding thing is one thing that we wondered about. And the one thing that we don't really know is what he's being asked to do. Cause there are some nights when he could grab 5-6 rebounds.
Right.
And then they're just telling, hey, get back, you know, don't worry about, you know, getting down there and banging the post. Rebounds at this point.
Yeah, because as you said, he is playing some two guard. He's out on the perimeter, so you're not going to get a lot of those easy uncontested rebounds, or you know, like you're not down there. So yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
So Carl Anthony Towns is one of the most exciting prospects in the NBA. He's a guy I think every NBA fan last year was just blown away. Like, wow, this guy seems to fulfill all the potential of top picks where we get excited and then we start seeing the holes in their game. But at this point, I feel like everyone is just, I don't know, starry-eyed amazed for Carl Anthony Towns. So what do you think he can do this year that will live up to the promise or just not be disappointing for the potential that he showed last year?
I don't know. That's the thing. I mean, last year it was incredible.
Right.
I think that if he doesn't play up to that level and still be very good, I think there's going to be some disappointment. I think there's even the possibility of, oh, you know, the Timberwolves don't make the playoffs. Is Carl Anthony Towns that good? So I think that he has to at least play at or above what he did last year. I think maybe consistently, you know, working the three-point shot. You know, I mean, granted, I think Steve McPherson said this, where it shouldn't be the cake, but it should be the icing. And I think becoming more consistent with that and being more of a threat from the outside, helping them make him more dynamic. I think that's one thing we could see from him. And I think just, you know, become a better defender. I mean, he's already a pretty smart guy, but I mean, he was 19 years old last year. So
right.
I mean, there's still obviously room for improvement there.
Yeah, like Carl Anthony Towns, like, again, astronomical expectations. I mean, they put him on Christmas Day, you know, for goodness sakes. Like, so people are going to be watching him expecting a lot. And so I think, yeah, it's like if he does improve as a defender. And so as a defender, do you see him more? It seems like the way the NBA is going, he'd be more of a five. But the way the Timberwolves roster is built, it seems like they want to get other guys on the court. Like Gorgui Jang is a good player, you know, and he seems to fit reasonably well with Towns. Like, so do you see him more as a four or a five? And what do you think is like the best fit type of player next to him in the front court?
But I've had this discussion about the best ideal player next to Towns, and I think a Paul Millsap or a Draymond Green type, you know, the two really easiest player types to play.
Why don't you pick the two best the two best power forwards in the league?
Yeah, just go and get those guys.
Yeah, right.
Those kind of do-it-all guys who are also capable defenders.
Mm-hmm.
and, you know, who can move the ball as well. I think that goes well with him, but I don't think there's really anyone that really doesn't fit with him. I mean, I guess if, you know, a guy like a Greg Monroe, I wouldn't want to do that.
Right.
Where Towns would just have to, you know, essentially be guarding two guys at once and, you know, not have any space to operate in the post. I don't think, you know, a guy like that would be ideal.
Right.
I think he can play with just about anyone. I don't know that I'd want to see him with Cole Aldrich. I don't know that those two should ever be on the floor at the same time because that just seems weird to me.
Okay.
And there's even a lot of talk in town about how, you know, is Borgie Jang 4 or 5?
Right.
So, I mean, I think we're having even more positional ambiguity here.
Right. I mean, I don't see, it is funny. I was looking at a lot of, cause I was trying to put together what I thought the depth chart would be for the Timberwolves this year. And I was looking at a lot of different sites and several of them had like Jang listed at the power forward and Towns at the 5. And I was like, oh, I never even considered that. But I guess he has been technically playing some 4 for the last several years. Let's talk about another player, a guy who I fell in love with last summer watching some Eurobasket, but then didn't really, he kind of fell out of the rotation as far as I could tell. Bielitsa, Nemanja Bielitsa. I fell in love with this guy over the summer last year, and then he, I don't know if he disappointed. I felt like he played fine when he was in. Like, how do you think he fits into the team?
Well, I think ideally, I mean, he's a, you know, a huge, essentially ball handler to have for them in the front court. I mean, he can also stretch the floor. He is really what this team needed last year.
Uh-huh.
He did start out strong, you're right, but then he had a quad contusion or something like that. And I guess in the time off, I don't know what happened. We never figured this out, where he just seemed to lose his confidence. And he was just not the same player. Mm-hmm. I mean, he eventually started to show flashes of that again. But, I mean, he just faded, you know, really into obscurity to the point where, you know, I forgot to mention him, you know, a lot of times. And people still correct me, oh, you forgot Bielitsa.
Right.
And it's not that I don't like Nemanja Bielitsa. It's just that he became a ghost for the better part of last year. But there's definitely a lot he can add. I mean, because he can handle a ball, he can shoot, he can pass. I mean, there's a lot of incentive for the team to figure out how to, you know, get the most out of him. Because I do think he's a tremendous asset and a very unique player to have up front.
Right. He seems to be one. Again, he's a versatile. He's has decent size. He's got that ball handling. He has the shot. So he does seem like he's what the NBA is moving towards, and seems like he could be a great piece for the Timberwolves. You know, maybe making a run at the 8 seed if he fulfills that promise. But again, that's. That's kind of the Timberwolves question. It's like you have all these question marks of like, will this guy get better? Will this guy get better? Like, will this guy get better? Speaking of guys who, again, people are hoping for more from, and he's weirdly become like vaguely controversial. Are you a big Ricky Rubio fan? I know a lot of Timberwolves fans are defensive with how much criticism he gets. Like, where do you fall on that spectrum?
I'm a Rubio fan. I think the issue is kind of focusing too much on his weaknesses without understanding what he does so well and why he's so valuable and why the team has been, you know, a near 500 team with him on the floor for his career versus a lottery team.
Right.
With him off the floor when he doesn't play. I mean, just, you know, he is a good defender. I mean, he knows how to run the offense, I think, which is key, just knowing how to organize everyone. But yeah, the shooting is not good. I mean, there's no way to, you know, put lipstick on that. I mean,
Right. It's
something that he's worked tirelessly to get better at. But one thing I like is that he's not afraid to shoot if he gets the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that always kind of makes him a threat. It's not like he's, you know, like a Rondo where he's going to hesitate or drive it. Even though Rubio actually did get better at getting to the line last year, even if it did look a little bit like martyr ball where he was just trying to draw contact because he is actually a much better free throw shooter. But
yeah.
No, I'm huge on Rubio. I think, you know, he's great at setting other guys up. And I mean, the thing is with the Timberwolves, the roster is not constructed, you know, for him to be, you know, a featured scorer, which
right.
is obviously ideal. And I think that's the trouble in assessing his trade value too, or people talking about that is, where is he going to go? Who else has a similar setup where, you know, they can put Rubio in a similar position to succeed like that?
Right. I mean, it seems that ideally Rubio would be on a team just surrounded by shooters, you know, like 2 through 5, like dudes could knock down shots. But I mean, Rubio gets... As you said, there's no putting lipstick on the fact that he's one of the worst shooters in history statistically. But every time I watch his game, you know, you're struck with like this. It doesn't seem like that big of a problem. And granted, I'm not watching 82 Timberwolves games, but like, you know, it seems like he's an effective. And then if you look at the stats of all his teammates, like their net ratings are so much better when Rubio plays. So as an outsider, I'm hoping the Timberwolves maintain, you know, show some patience. We see what Thibodeau is going to do with the roster, and then we get to see Rubio play with this, which is getting to be a very talented, you know, Timberwolves roster. And I think, you know, I think we'll see good things from them, and I hope they stick with it. And again, as you said, there aren't obvious trade partners. There's no other point guards who are clearly better than him who people are like, do you want this guy? You know, like there's a lot of good point guards in the league, right. And Rubio is clearly, you know, a competent NBA starter, which some teams don't have. So it's like, you're not going to get one back probably. So
no, or that has, you know, the same impact. And I think the other thing is too, they don't have to do anything with right now.
Right.
I mean, they're not going to turn the keys over to a rookie point guard from day one. You know, I think they have the luxury of, you know, patience. And Chris Dunn, on draft night, sincerely sounded as if he's patient, learning from Rubio, mm-hmm. playing behind him. I mean, maybe that's going to change in 2 or 3 years when he wants a bigger role, you know, assuming he's deserving of it. But, I mean, that's 2 or 3 years down the road.
So Chris Dunn blew up Summer League for 2 games. What are the team's expectations for him? Like, I don't watch any college basketball, but I saw him play those 2 games, you know, in Vegas and was like, oh my goodness, like this guy could be incredible. You know, and clearly it's Summer League and we've seen other guys blow up who never were good again. But what's the feel around Timberwolves camp? You said he's probably going to be some backup and maybe some off guard.
Yeah, I think that's what we're looking at to start off at. I know Thibodeau said, you know, starting or not starting, but, you know, playing Rubio and Dunn together for stretches.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to see what that's going to look like because Dunn isn't a great shooter. He's a better shooter than Rubio, but he's by no means great, and that was even at the college level.
Right.
But I think, yeah, what we saw from him in Summer League was a lot of fun. I think, you know, it's having being able to have another ball handler who can break down a defense like that because, I mean, really, once he gets into the paint, I mean, at least, you know, in Summer League, which take that with what you will, but, I mean, it's over when he gets in the paint. I mean, he's getting to the rim, and I think it's either going in or he's getting a foul most times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I think that's a legit NBA skill, and he has the size that they're looking for, too. I mean, I think, you know, just to gradually improve as the season goes on is always kind of a realistic expectation for me. I don't worry so much about December, January, because we saw with Gorgui Jang, Shabazz Muhammad, their rookie years, how they couldn't even crack the rotation until February. Yeah. And once they did, they played well. But because they had to learn, they weren't good right away. But I think Chris Dunn's a little more polished than those guys coming in. But I think it always takes guys time to do that. So I think not rushing him will be a good idea.
That's a good idea. And it seems that, again, that seems to be the path that the franchise is taking, is not rushing it. Like, they didn't make any big moves in the offseason. So, like, are you happy with that overall? I mean, the big offseason move is getting Thibodeau, and you hope Thibodeau can install his defense, maybe be a franchise changing to turn this from a pretty bad defensive team into one of the best defensive teams. So do you approve of the offseason? Like, how do you feel they did this offseason with, again, just adding a couple backup pieces?
Yeah, I feel like they did well. They didn't add any pieces that are going to tie up, you know, long-term flexibility and what they can offer to Towns, Wiggins, or LaVine going forward. So as they maintained a lot of flexibility there, they did not bite on, you know, a 4-year deal for Luol Deng or, you know, someone like that, which I was very happy about.
Right.
I mean, the money they could have done whatever with, cause they have so much cap space.
Right.
So that doesn't bother me, but yeah, I like that they, you know, they added veterans, you know how to play, but who also aren't going to take, you know, minutes and possessions away from their young guys. So I think that's smart. It's also addressing needs. I mean, cause they needed front court bodies. I mean, you know, Greg Smith, you know, was around, I think, longer than they expected him to be last year.
Yeah.
Just because Kevin Garnett couldn't play much, and Adrian Payne as well. You can't really trust him too much.
Yeah, we were assuming this is the final go-round for Mr. Adrian Payne, I think. But and Garnett's coming back for his 40th year, we think, right? His age is 40, 40th year of life.
Yeah, yeah. I have no idea. I guess that Kevin Garnett and Glenn Taylor, the owner, we're going to talk and kind of figure that out. And we're getting later and later. So
I'm
the longer it goes on, the more likely it is that he plays. But I think we've seen these situations before that just doesn't really mean anything. Because I think, you know, Jermaine O'Neal and Ray Allen were team hunting until, you know, April or whatever that year. And they're like, oh, we're not playing. And everyone's like, okay, we know.
Yeah. I kind of want him to play because I think he has the chance to be the first player to ever play in four decades of his own life, like to play in his teens, his 20s, his 30s, and 40s. He'd be the first one ever. So,
I kind of
hope we'd see that. But then again, the Timberwolves, they actually, with Pekovic, a.k.a. General Zod, like carrying Pekovic and Garnett on your roster, it's kind of like, I don't want to say dead weight, but it's sort of dead weight. You know, like you're, it's what the Grizzlies are doing kind of with Jordan Adams and some of the other hurt guys from last year. It's like you're carrying one of your 15 roster spots with a guy who's probably not going to play at all. So would you think they would make another roster move to maybe, I don't know, is stretching Pekovic going to be a good idea at this point, or is he ever going to get back on the court? Do you know?
Well, I don't think the expectation is for him to ever play again,
right,
or at least certainly not the level. I mean, what they've said is that they just want 15 minutes a game out of him, mm-hmm. which is really sad considering 2 years ago he was at about 30.
Right.
That surgery he had last offseason was kind of really the last ditch attempt, and we saw that did not go so well.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I love Peck. He's a great guy, so it's really hard to see this kind of end like this for him.
Right.
But I think more than anything, I mean, it gets them closer to the salary floor.
Oh, yeah. That's...
Which is probably, I think, the biggest reason. And, I mean, Peck's contract is up, I believe, after next season. Mm-hmm. So there really isn't a lot of incentive to stretch him.
Yeah, that's right.
Because, you know, his contract's going to be inconsequential. It'll end at the same time Cole Aldrich does. So mm-hmm. not too worried about either of those.
Right. All right. Well, to wrap up, I got a couple questions. What's the deal with the trees in the Timberwolves logo? Do they mean anything?
Not that I know of. I think just having the timber and the whole wood thing, I am personally in favor of removing all trees when they do redesign for next year or whenever Nike takes over.
Okay.
Because they just wind up making things a little too busy.
Right. I mean, it's the Timberwolf is describing the wolf. It's not trees and a wolf. You know, like,
nope.
I wondered, I didn't know if those six, like if there was some Minnesota State thing where the six trees stood for the six parts of the state or something. Cause I know Tennessee, we have the three stars on our flag. It's for West, mm-hmm. Central, and East Tennessee, you know? So, but I don't know if there's any kind of significance or anything. Cause again,
Not that I know of.
I didn't know if there was like a Back to the Future situation where they could like knock down a tree and then we'd come back and the logo would have five trees. But anyway. I'll put you on the spot for this. I've asked some other guests. Are there any rule changes in the NBA that you would like to see or would support?
I don't think so. I mean, I also didn't really have a problem with, you know, the hack a Shaq or hack or whatever.
Right.
I didn't think that was a huge issue, and I think what they did with that was fine. Otherwise, I don't really see any pressing issues with that. I'm just not one to kind of, you know, just react to like, oh, right. Well, now we need to, you know, find a way to, you know, mitigate super teams like, you know, the Warriors, I mean, treating exceptions like the rules and
right.
Or gung ho on lottery form, even though I think there's probably some progress they could do there. I know they're looking at that. I trust Lee to do the right things. I think at this point they haven't done anything that's kind of questionable or I think would really ruin the watchability of games. So I don't know. There's nothing that I'd really say.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of a couple of the one all clear path fouls have to be eliminated, or at least the review. That kills me in the games. And then I want I want half court shots to not count against your shooting percentage, because Kevin Durant has attempted one half court shot in the last 6 years. It's driving me batty. watching him dribble out the clock. But so coming into this season, now that I've told you, I think you'll notice Kevin Durant never shooting a half court shot. Drives me up the
wall.
I'm
gonna pay attention to that.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a 40% 3-point shooter now.
Yeah.
You'd think he could afford, you know, a point here or there.
You'd think he would welcome the opportunity to score points for his team because that's how you win. But who knows? It won't matter.
And it's so demoralizing to have a half-court shot hit against you at the buzzer.
Right. Steph Curry literally murdered the Grizzlies twice with, like, into third quarters, like, oh, the Grizzlies are on a run. Nope, I'm going to hit a 50-footer. And then he just walks off. He's like, yeah, you guys should probably go home now. And yeah,
yep.
As a fan, it was staggering. All right. Last thing. What's your best case breakfast? We do talk about breakfast a lot on Fast Break Breakfast. So for you, Derek, what's your best case scenario breakfast?
Oh man. I think stuffed French toast is a good one, but I'm also a big egg guy.
Oh yeah. Eggs are awesome.
I mean, eggs are like, you know, a canvas for breakfast.
Yeah.
Eggs Benedict, omelets, scrambled, fried. Scramblers are good too. Oh man, it really depends on how I feel when I sit down at a table for breakfast.
Right.
What I want that day. But I'm a big breakfast fan. It's probably my favorite meal of the day.
Oh man, after our own heart, just sucking up to us. That's perfect. All right. Well, thanks, Derek. Do you have anything you want to plug or let people know where they can find your stuff, read your stuff online?
Yeah. My work during the season will be featured on 1500ESPN.com, as well as hardwoodparoxysm.com between always, really. And then at Derek James, all one word on Twitter.
Yep. So that's at Derek James, MBA. All right, man. Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thanks, Derek. All right. Big thanks to Derek. The Grizzlies open the regular season against the Timberwolves, which is going to be a great matchup. Again, Minnesota, definitely one of the teams to watch this upcoming season. I'll be back with another solo podcast on Wednesday night, and the guest we have penciled in, I'm excited about. Of course, it might not actually happen, so if it's a disappointing guest, we won't say anything. We'll just pretend we're very excited, whoever I interview on Wednesday. All right. So go order some gear at lootcrate.com/fastbreak. Follow us on Twitter at fastbreakbreak. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on rabble.tv. Write us a review on iTunes. Tell your friends and family. You know the drill. All right. Thanks for listening. You guys are the best. And remember, breakfast is the most important thing.